We'd like to take a moment to talk about Jane, one of our sponsors who helped make this episode possible. Jane is a practice management software built for every kind of mental health practitioner and is thoughtfully designed with your clients in mind. Jane makes it convenient to meet with individuals, couples, or families, whether that's online, via Jane's telehealth options, or in person.
From day one, you can expect unlimited customer support through onboarding that sets you up for success and a 99.99% software reliability that ensures that Jane is always ready to start the day with you.
Just as you are always learning and improving, Jane is too. The team at Jane values customer feedback and uses it to design even more helpful features. So you can think of Jane as a software that grows with you.
If you're curious to see Jane in action, head to jane.app/mentalhealth/US to book a free one-on-one demo. You can also mention the code DCPOD at sign up for a 2-month free grace period on your new Jane account. Hey everyone, you are listening to the Divergent Conversations podcast. We are two neurodivergent mental health professionals in a neurotypical world. I'm Patrick Cassell.
And I'm Dr. Neff.
And during these episodes, we do talk about sensitive subjects, mental health, and there are some conversations that can certainly feel a bit overwhelming. So we do just want to use that disclosure and disclaimer before jumping in. And thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Divergent Conversations. So we've been having oh my gosh.
You got this.
Social ligaments, hard. We've been talking the last few episodes about some of the emotional experiences post-discovery, post-identification, post-diagnosis. And what we want to dive into today is the kind of post-diagnosis identity spiral. Yeah. And the question of, and I love this question when I've seen it, of like, am I still me? And partly because it's, well, I think there's a lot to unpack in that. But yeah, do you resonate with this question of like, did you have that question of, am I still me as part 100%. Of your?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as someone who has masked very highly throughout most of his life, I think when you start to unmask, you start to question your sense of self completely in all aspects of like, because I think masking separates you from your true sense of self so much that like when all is said and done, you're left kind of sorting through almost like an archaeologist of like, is this like, am I still me? We've talked about this. Like, do we still enjoy the same things? Like, do I have hobbies that I like? Do I actually like these friends that I have? Like,
yeah.
You start to question everything.
Yeah. Okay, I almost want to have like different buckets because there's so much about identity that gets kicked up. So that would be one bucket, would be the masking of like, if we've been masking, then, you know, what we find pleasurable or our desires, like we've not necessarily thought about those or we're pretty disconnected. So there's the coming to know like more authentic self, but then that doesn't necessarily match the life we've built.
Right.
And so that's a huge bit of identity. I think another bucket I would add is, well, if there's a name for this, does it, but I've thought it's me, does it take it away? So for example, okay, that's an autistic trait. If it's an autistic trait, does that make it less of a personality thing? So for example, like with special interests, if it's like so much of my identity was around my relationships to special interests, but now we call that a trait, right? So is it, I see that happen for people too, where now that we have a name for an experience, it's an autistic trait. It's like, well, does that take away from my identity?
Yeah. And I think you even start to ask yourself, is this really a special interest of mine? Like, am I really that interested in this thing that has shaped so much of my formative years or my identity? Now I'm looking at it as if like, do I actually like Lord of the Rings? I don't know.
Or like for me, it was like being a really zealous Christian, right? Not current context.
Sure,
but
sure.
It's like, that was so core to my identity because it's like being a really passionate Christian becomes pretty integral to someone's identity in the evangelical context. But then if it's like, especially I think this would make more sense if someone was still in that context. Yeah. If someone is like, oh, I'm this passionate about my religion, or I'm this passionate about, you know, a social justice issue because of my autism. does it take away from the passion? I think becomes the question for some people.
Absolutely. One thing I see people experience too, this isn't exactly in the identity space or post-discovery, but you've just maybe went through the evaluation testing process. You start to have massive imposter syndrome. What if I am not autistic ADHD? What if all of this time that I've spent during my entire existence trying to figure this out chalks up to, nope, otherwise specified, or some other mental health experience that they're going to explain to me?
Yeah. So the, like, maybe we call that the diagnostic bucket, the like, and also with that, the, am I autistic enough, or am I ADHD enough, or am I taking away from someone else by putting on this identity? So that becomes part of it as well.
It's imposter syndrome-ish, you know, it's like, I don't want to take up too much space. I don't want to say the wrong thing. I don't want to like take away from other people who are struggling. Like, maybe I'm not autistic enough. All the things that start coming. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So like, yeah, do I really kind of have the right to take on this identity? Which I think makes, whenever we're integrating a new identity, I think it makes so much sense that we would have a lot of that imposter syndrome around that experience of like, what does it mean to take this identity on, to integrate it? Yeah. What will people think?
Yep. All of that comes to mind. Other buckets that start to exist post-discovery.
I would say, like, maybe we could call it the intersectional bucket. And we've kind of alluded to this in the wardrobe episodes, but it's just the idea that I think whenever you start querying any one identity, like, and I would say putting on an autism or ADHD identity and integrating that, that's kind of an act of querying.
Right.
That all other identities often get put on the table. So the identity bucket, in the sense of other identities, might get explored in new ways.
Yep.
And so, or maybe we call it the querying bucket of just, you start exploring different ideas from, it's almost like once you get free of the social constructs of like, this is what society expects me to be. And like, you start asking, who the hell am I actually?
Yep.
Once you start doing that in one part of your life, then you start doing it in all of them.
Absolutely.
And so, yeah, the querying bucket, I would say.
Querying bucket for sure. I would say there becomes like almost a accommodations bucket, because you become so much more aware of the accommodations that you need in your life. So you're like sometimes shamefully asking for things that bring up vulnerability, or they it might have a certain reaction from a family member or a friend or a loved one who's like, well, you never needed this before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like accommodations, vulnerability, like getting more in touch with our needs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a huge one, especially if part of our identity before that was maybe being like hyper achieving or hyper independent.
Yep.
That bucket is hard because it directly threatens perhaps something that we were using to feel secure in our identity. And it kind of undermines that. Like if that was the way we were coping, is by overcompensating, then that would feel like a threat to the way we were identifying.
Absolutely. And I think that it brings up some ableism too from potential people in your life who are like, you've done A, B, and C, and now all of a sudden you can't go out in public. You can't socialize in a certain way. You need, you know, A, B, and C in order to be comfortable at my house. I mean, it starts to really create these dynamics if people are not receptive, where the friendship/relationship bucket gets created, where you're like, who am I placing in this bucket who I feel like is affirming and understanding, or at least curious enough to learn?
Yeah. Yeah. That was exactly where my brain was already going. Cause it's, of course, my brain has a visual of these buckets with labels. And I was like, oh, the next one is the relationship bucket. Yep. Cause relationships shift often post discovery. And when we start talking about it, some people shed away, new people enter our lives, and our relationships have a big impact on our identity. I guess also career. Many of us might shift careers as part of this process. And career is a huge part of our identity. Damn. Like, This is a huge process to go.
I see another workbook slash set of graphics coming from Meg and Anna at some point, even though I was told to hold you accountable to no more of those.
It'd be such a good visual workbook is the thing.
It's such a good visual workbook for the autistic burnout city too. Like, God, we had so many good metaphors in that series.
Oh my gosh. That would be a cool collective. Like if people who listen to the podcast wanted to draw pictures and a cool like collective experience to make like an autistic burnout city illustration guide and then a monotropic manner and people could submit. And then it's like, wait, that'd actually be really cool. And it's an illustration of the two books. So if anyone's listening and you like doing art and you want to send in your pictures of,
I would actually be this is an amazing idea and divergent thought process right now. But if you all want to send us any sort of pictures or illustrations or creations of Burnout City and Monotropic Manor, you can send them to our Instagram messages or you can email them to our Divergent Conversations podcast Gmail. So that will be awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing those.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah,
idea.
That'd be really cool.
So all these buckets are piling up and it almost feels like the roof is leaking and it's falling into all these different places appropriately though. So,
and at the same time, while the roof is leaking, you're asking, but am I actually autistic or am I actually ADHD? So you're having these buckets, but you're also like, but am I?
And I need more proof.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a very real part of this journey in discovery because for so many of us, right? Like if it happens later in life that you're starting to unpack this, you might've gone several decades, you know, upwards of 5, 6, 7, 8 decades of not knowing this. Or maybe it was gnawing at the back of your mind, but you really didn't have the language for it yet. So there's just so much to unpack. And I think it makes a lot of sense to constantly be questioning like, but am I really? Am I missing something? Is it something else that could be described or explained for this experience?
Well, that gets tricky, right? Because there often is other things in the mix. Like it's so rare to meet someone who's autistic and nothing else or ADHD and nothing else. And then I would imagine if you're combining autism and ADHD, it would make it even more rare for there to be nothing else in the mix, be it complex trauma, OCD, bipolar, a personality disorder, like these are, so there probably is something else in the mix. Right. And then there can be this kind of urge to like try and pinpoint every single experience we have to like almost map it to a diagnosis.
Yep.
And on one hand, I see how that can be helpful. On another hand, sometimes I think that can get too like reductivistic with it, where we kind of start losing our humanity or our like, you know, maybe this is just the complexity of my experience and it doesn't neatly map onto some diagnostic or identity label. And maybe that's okay. But I do find this almost like frantic urge at times, probably, and this is probably a lot of the autism of like, well, is this experience an attachment experience or is it RSD or is it complex trauma? And it's like, well, it's all of those things. Like it's part of the complex soup.
Yep. The complex soup. Yes. I think that's a great point and really common to try to pinpoint and then really common to be overwhelmed by the inability to pinpoint because it becomes so complicated and so overwhelmed. And then maybe you go and look at Dr. Neff's Misdiagnosis Monday graphics and you're like, a little bit of peace and reassurance, but the overlaps are challenging and complicated and very nuanced.
Well, and because they're not just like overlaps, but they kind of, we've talked about it on a recent episode, the idea that anxiety or OCD will like breed on, you know, autistic or ADHD core woundings. It's not just like they have a compounding experience, right? So when you have OCD on top of being ADHD, that is a different experience than just OCD. It's not like this plus this plus this. It's, what is the phrase? The whole is greater than the sums of the parts, like the way they stack and then influence each other. Or like in a recent episode, you were kind of like, well, was it ADHD? Was it addiction? It's like, well, those things are interacting in a way that it'd be probably impossible to pinpoint. It's one thing because it's how they compound.
Yep. Yeah, and exacerbate or intensify or reduce even. So complicated, to say the least. And I think you can get caught up in a lot of that thought post-discovery, immediately post-discovery. You almost like, okay, here's this answer. Here's this like aha moment. Now I'm going to unpack every single portion of my life and I'm going to do it through this lens. But if it doesn't add up the way I need it to, you start to almost question every single thing of like, is that really real? Is this, does this land for me? And then I think another bucket post-discovery is the disclosure bucket of, when do I feel confident enough to actually publicly share this with other people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And that can get complicated because depending how that disclosure goes, we can then get pulled into feeling like we have to justify like our autism or our ADHD, which that can also look like kind of, you know, one idea we talk about on here is like, what does autism or ADHD look like behind closed doors? Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes it's like, I'm pulling out my dirty laundry to, I meant that figuratively, but I guess that could also be meant literally, to like try and show you how much I struggle to prove my autism or my ADHD. So that can be a really awkward dynamic and also leave us feeling really raw and vulnerable of like, do I have to kind of unpack my trauma or the things I feel shame on for you to believe this thing I'm disclosing to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So that gets really complicated as well. So I think there's a lot of overwhelm that happens immediately afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I think you want to have one or two safe people in your life who you can process some of this stuff with. Because you've talked about it, I've talked about it at length, but sometimes this is not received the way you want it to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just going to go with your metaphor of all these buckets, the roof is dripping with water. And then when we're just letting someone into that, and it's like, it's kind of a half constructed building that we're letting them in on. And so the feedback they give us is going to be really kind of vulnerable.
Yep.
So when we're already in that mess and then we invite feedback in, that can be really destabilizing because we haven't yet sorted it for ourselves. There's so much we're unpacking.
Right. Right. Yep. I like that.
Okay. But what,
no, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, what's the rain in this metaphor with the rain? What's the rain from the ceiling? What is that?
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't want to go like too extreme. It's certainly not like acid rain-esque. It's not like burning you.
I was just curious why your brain added that to the buckets of like water dripping from a roof that is leaking. Yeah.
I get the metaphor. I get the image of like patching the roof of like patching each place that's leaking is a place of like, maybe you are intentionally spending time with it, deconstructing it, solidifying the foundation of it. But at first it's like patchwork because you are trying to do so many different things simultaneously that you are missing a lot of it often, where you're like overlooking certain aspects or you get really firmly like entrenched in one area and let the other stuff go. And I think it's hard when you're trying to like kind of do it all at the same time. And I think a lot of our mentality and brain is are often like, I need to do it all at once. Like it feels chaotic.
So it's kind of the whack-a-mole idea that you brought in to like, yeah, we have these buckets of identity. We don't always have control over when like questions pop up around them.
Yep.
So that's the leaky roof that you're like patching. I like that metaphor. Cause it is a lot to be tracking if our relationships are shifting, if our career's shifting, if we're querying identities, and it can feel really whack-a-mole and out of control. And it's not an autistic friendly process. It is my life has been deeply destabilized and I'm trying to patchwork it back together, but there's not a linear process for this.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Okay.
That's kind of where my brain goes. And I think it gets easier over time, at least to solidify each of those buckets and like not have it feel so whack-a-mole-esque, but at first I do think it feels very much like chaos in a lot of ways.
Yeah. So I don't do much research anymore these days, but this is something. If I magically had like extra hours I could pull out of my pocket, I'd actually really love to do a qualitative study, like looking at the identity experience post-discovery for adults. Because I think it is such a complex process for all the reasons we've just named.
Sure.
And I'm sure there would be themes that emerged. And it'd just be so interesting to like do a proper research study on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's fascinating to see all the different things that come up for people and their own experiences after post-discovery with something that feels really significant.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's like ultimately for me, it was more stabilizing, but I've definitely seen for some people, it really is more destabilizing than stabilizing coming to this identity, or it takes a lot of destabilization to get to something that feels more stabilizing.
Yeah, for sure.
For you, how destabilizing was the process like in the first year?
It was very destabilizing. And, you know, unfortunately, that process coexisted with my second like major throat surgery and losing my voice. So it was really what a symbolism. It was a rough couple of years of like losing and reshifting and reframing identity in multitudes of ways. So it was not just coming to terms with an ADHD identity. It was also losing my voice simultaneously. And that was a really weird psychological and emotional place to be of trying to make sense of this and communicate some of this stuff out into the world, and only being able to speak for X amount of hours per day because my vocal cords wouldn't allow for it. Coming to terms of like chronic rare medical conditions simultaneously. It was not a pleasant couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah. We were recording during that.
Shortly thereafter. Yeah. We were recording in that, and it's been a journey for sure.
I mean, that gets back to like, it's not neat and tidy for interest. Like for me too, it was a similar experience in the sense of I was discovering this early in the pandemic. And then I also had, so the first time I had COVID, I had pretty significant symptoms for the first like 9 months. And then, so grappling with like long COVID pieces, autism, working remote for the first time, parenting in a pandemic context, and all of these overlapped in ways. So like then, you know, for years, I rarely left my house. And it's like, I think I almost diagnostically overshadowed where, because of the fatigue and the brain fog and the fear of contracting COVID, I just made my life really small. And I kept being like, well, that's the autism. I'm accommodating my autism. But actually it was a bit more complex because there was also discovery of the health piece. My life also had shifted significantly because of the pandemic. Right. So yeah, similar for you. It's like, it was this really layered experience. Yeah. And I almost overshadowed by saying everything was the autism when actually looking back, it's like, that was the long COVID, or that was like, there are other pieces at play.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's got to be really rare for someone to probably have like go through this process and then like just be unpacking one of these buckets or boxes, so to speak. Like there's multitudes of things going on simultaneously, unfortunately, and often it's chronic health or whatever else.
Because usually that's what makes the autism apparent, is either a burnout or because there's been a health condition. So now the autism becomes more apparent. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Or a child that's been diagnosed. So you're also wrapping your mind around parenting an autistic kid or an ADHD kid, while also your identity. So yeah, usually there is because there's something that caused the awareness. So usually there's another big thing in the mix.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. The identity spiral.
Light note that you wanted to end.
No, we are failing. We are failing at finding our lightness in our play.
That's okay. I think, you know, we need both sides of the coin. So
yeah. Why do you think, let's actually, so we've been recording, I don't know how many episodes we've recorded, but we've recorded, I don't know, 7. Why do you think it's harder to find our playfulness in this series we're recording? Do you think it's the content? Do you think it's where we're at?
Well, when we did the Burnout City series, I was in pretty bad burnout, and I still am.
Yeah, I was too. I was actually really depressed.
I was
depressed.
Enjoying laughing at it.
Do we record best when we're depressed?
Probably, yeah. I mean,
that doesn't make sense.
I mean, I feel often more like creative when I'm depressed. I don't know. But I think, and this is just a hypothesis, is because we are not structuring it. We're just kind of like jumping all over the place. So maybe it's just harder for us to feel as anchored into a concept because it's mm-hmm. like, because burnout, it was like 8 episodes of burnout, right? So like, mm-hmm. The themes changed, but the common construct was the same.
Mm-hmm.
So that was probably somewhat helpful in a way.
Yeah, which is interesting. That's how I often talk about my ADHD and autism play best together when there's a really solid frame and mm-hmm. container.
Yeah.
And then my ADHD kind of knows the parameters from which it can play. And so, yeah, we had that in that series, which the series... we have more of an ADHD container of like, let's tackle this topic or this question. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually doing the math, this is now episode 10 that we've recorded in a week.
Mm.
I think there's that too. I mean, I know we batched burnout, but I think we did 8 episodes over 2 weeks, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So now here we are Monday to Monday. This is the finality of 10 and with mm-hmm. 4 more days of recording set up. Trying to get to like 18 to 20. It's a lot.
Yeah. Also, I do feel like we're talking about heavier topics and not like, it's interesting. Because we are coming in with like a question that someone asked because mm-hmm. we asked listeners, you know, if you're just entering the ADHD or autism conversation, what are topics?
Yeah.
And I don't think we necessarily expected that, but I feel like in a lot of these episodes, we start talking and then we kind of bump into things that feel emotionally complex or heavy. And so I also think maybe it's a reflection of like a reflection of the heaviness that is wrapped into this experience of discovering you're autistic or ADHD later in life or at any point in your life.
I agree. Yeah, I think that's probably exactly it. And like with burnout, right? It's a concept. It sucks. I'm not minimizing how bad autistic mm-hmm. burnout sucks, but it's also like one thing, right? It's like this immovable object in a way that we're thinking about. Mm-hmm. What we're talking about now is a lot of identity focused stuff opposed to like, hey, we're in burnout. It sucks. Like, I don't know what to mm-hmm. tell you. It's inevitable for the most part. It feels a bit more personal in this regard, mm-hmm. I would say. So it's probably just heavier in that way too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I know I'm going to feel a lot more vulnerability when these start airing than the past stuff that we've recorded.
Yeah, I just want to share it with you. So, we'll create that buffer minus the nook for yourself. But I think that's probably it.
Yeah.
Life is weird right now, too. I mean,
life is weird right now.
Mm-hmm. You know? So, all right. Well, we're going to wrap up, I suppose. New episodes on Fridays and on platforms and YouTube. So goodbye.
Hey, it's Dr. Neff here. This season, we are clearly talking about autistic burnout, a topic that Neurodivergent Insights has covered extensively. So if you would like more resources to supplement your learning, we've put together a page where we've curated all of our autistic burnout resources, free and paid resources. We have lots of articles on autistic burnout. We have an upcoming free email course that's going to be released soon. We have workbooks on autistic burnout. So if you'd like to check out our resources, again, both free and paid, you can go to neurodivergentinsights.com/burnout-resources. It's linked below and in the show notes. I hope you don't need these resources, but if you do, they are there for you.